Regularly scheduled programs will not be seen tonight so that we may bring you the NFL football game live and in color.
From the men who brought you basically a sports show, if your football fix wasn't met on Thursday night, it's time for an additional slice. This is basically a football show right now. Let's go!
Let's knock them on their backs, butt them in the mouth, knock their ass in the dirt. That's what we gotta do.
Get it in here! I got one thing to say. This is when the big dogs come out.
Stay right.
Okay?
All right.
The camera of the big dogs. Stay on the ball.
Hey, baby! We're gonna be here all day, baby! I like this kind of party! I like this kind of party, baby!
His method is not Grand Prix, but Demolition Derby.
Welcome to episode 8, season 2 of basically a football show. I am Zach, along with me is Greg. And Greg, football happened this weekend.
It did indeed.
As it does just about every weekend here in the fall.
Yeah.
not a terribly interesting weekend. There's a lot of highs, a lot of some upsets in the NFL. A little upset in our power pole in college football.
Yeah.
It's kind of a general week of football. And we have a new number one team in the land, though.
I also want to point out, too, that in one of the rarest occurrences you will see of late, the Cleveland Browns won a football game in a blowout.
Yes, we will definitely get to the Cleveland football Browns and their new resurgence. You know, they're a half game out of the lead.
I know.
NFC North. Especially thanks to, you know, a lot of sister kissing going on in Cincinnati.
Good Lord.
But we'll start in the NFL, and we'll start on Thursday, where my Indianapolis Colts, it looked early like this was going to be another one of those Thursday games. It was 24-0 after the first quarter.
Yeah.
T.Y. Hilton had like 150 receiving yards in the first half. Andrew Luck was going off. The Colts were on a roll. But give credit to J.J. Watt and the Houston Texans. They were able to do enough defense to keep the thing close. And they chipped and chipped and chipped away. And the Texans got close, but unable to overcome them in what is the best Thursday night game of the season so far, a 33-28 Colts victory.
You know, I was
back on top of the AFC South.
I was going to say, too, that it was such a week that probably the best game of the week was the Thursday night game. So that gives you an idea of what we had in the NFL this week. Although that really was a good game, but yeah, it looked every bit like it was going to be another blowout. I tuned in. I'm like, it's 24-0 already. I thought, here we go again. And then all of a sudden, the Texans are back in it. So,
yeah.
But the Colts, credit to them, they held on to get the win on the road, which was pretty nice. So,
yeah,
I think they've established they're the best team in that division at this point.
They have. But, I mean, in terms of big picture, I'm a little worried with the finishing ability of this team.
Yeah, I would be too.
I mean, even in the games where it's like, oh, well, they came back and they got close, but then they couldn't come back and beat Denver. But at the same time, they were close to beating Denver. And this is kind of how it was last year. They're so close to being that much better, they just can't push over the ledge, it seems.
Well, you know what, though? Kind of in this era of the NFL, though, it's kind of hard to close a team out because the defenses are their hands are so tight. It's very difficult to lock somebody down once you've got a big lead. And I guess it makes for exciting football, though I don't know that it necessarily is exciting when you kind of know that if a team gets up and there's enough time left, odds are they're probably going to put together some sort of comeback if they're halfway decent. But
yeah.
But yeah,
the other problem is the Colts can't run the ball, so they can't kill the clock.
Yeah.
You know? So,
wow,
I mean, Trent Richardson,
game.
17 rushes for 41 yards.
Yeah.
He got a touchdown, but, you know.
How many yards was his touchdown?
Probably an inch. It wasn't too long. But Andrew Luck, 370, three touchdowns. T.Y. Hilton, 9 receptions, 223 yards.
Yeah.
Which went to waste on my fantasy team this week because I did not start a quarterback.
Oh, no.
That's rough. That's
yeah,
rough.
I saw that and I thought, well, anybody that's got him that played him this week is doing very, very well. But how about Andrew Luck? And I'm going to say this every chance I get because it was such a ridiculous argument
every week
when we heard it. But are there still people out there that would rather have Colin Kaepernick than Andrew Luck or RG3 than Andrew Luck? I'm just asking.
No.
I'm just asking. No. Because that was the talk this time, what, a year or two ago?
Yeah. I mean, could you imagine Washington with Luck or the 49ers with Luck?
Anybody, really. I mean,
yeah.
I think he makes Jacksonville that much better. He's a good player, and he's I think, exactly the quarterback we all thought he was going to be. And
he makes everybody on the team better.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and the thing is, really, he even makes the running game better because he can run the ball effectively. And he's fantastic at the play action. So while the running game isn't there, just as long as they hand the ball off for, you know, just to put some sort of, like, smoke screen over, hey, right, we might run the ball occasionally, then he can still use the play action pass and be as effective as he was in that first quarter.
Yeah, but because Trent Richardson is not scaring a whole lot of people, but you can't just go out and pass constantly, so you have to give the at least the appearance that you've got a running game, although imagine how good this team would be if they had a decent running back.
Yeah, no, I think we said it last week that imagine if the Colts took everything they have, added J.J. Watt and Arian Foster from the Texans.
God.
Could you imagine how much better they'd be?
They'd be a Super Bowl contender, I think.
If they had that defensive game changer up front and then somebody that can run the ball semi-effectively.
And speaking of, you know, while we're talking about this game, J.J. Watt, good Lord, guy good. I mean, he's just amazing.
He really does something every week that just makes you – like, I asked the question earlier in the season, and it's kind of a dumb question. Like, is he the best defensive player? Of course he is.
I think
you look at what he does week in and week out, and, he ran back another touchdown this week, so.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. This is a defensive lineman we're talking about, and the guy's got wheels. And once he gets in the open field, he's tough to catch. But I haven't seen a guy dominate on defense the way he has, probably since Lawrence Taylor, I would think. That is just a guy that can literally change a game by himself like Watt can. But
right, and Lawrence Taylor was a linebacker, so he was kind of all over the field. Where J.J. Watt's all up front, and he still gets interceptions.
Yeah,
you know,
once he got two now this year, right? Two for
something
touchdowns.
Like that. So yeah, Colts 4-2, leading the division by a game, and I expect it to be that way for the rest of the season.
Yeah, Texans, like we said, they're improved, but I don't think they're quite as improved as we might have thought early on. They're going to be okay, but I don't think there's a real threat in that division for the Colts.
Let's move on to Sunday and get some of these games out of the way really quickly because they don't need to be discussed any further than that. Jaguars are 0-6. They lost to the Titans by 2 points on the road.
Oh, my God. What a game that must have been to watch.
Yeah, and, you know, the Jaguars, they got close. You know, they scored a touchdown there in the fourth quarter. Blake Bortles, 336 yards.
He's still alive. That's the important thing.
Yes, he is still a functioning human being at this point.
He's upright and he's throwing passes. That's all you can ask for.
Yeah, he's playing decently. It's just, you know, crappy team. So good luck to you in like 3 years, Blake.
Yeah, he's got nothing to work with down there. Nothing.
And speaking of terrible football teams in Florida, so the Buccaneers.
God.
Joe freaking Flacco threw 4 touchdown passes in the first quarter, 5 in the first half. And the Ravens were up 38-0 at the half in Tampa. And, and for good reason, as you can see in this photo, Greg, the Tampa Bay fans decided not to show up for the second half because the Buccaneers decided not to show up for the first half.
I can't blame them. I feel bad for anybody that spends money to go see that team because it's not like NFL tickets are cheap.
Yeah.
But
and just because you're losing, they don't make them any cheaper.
But, yeah, really, you don't get a discount or get half your money back if you leave at halftime. But this Ravens team, are we ready to say that they're a pretty good team yet? Because they went down and they did what they were supposed to do against these guys. I mean,
okay, but Atlanta did the same thing to Tampa. You can't take anything out of a game against Tampa Bay this season.
That's true.
You just can't. But fun fact, the Buccaneers beat the Steelers, if you remember, 2 weeks
yes,
ago.
Yes, they did.
And,
in Pittsburgh.
Yes. So just keep that in your back pocket as we move on to their game later. Broncos in their first game back in MetLife Stadium since that Super Bowl collapse. They dominated the Jets start to finish in a 31-17 game. Not too much to write home about there. That was kind of expected. Lions with a 17-3 win over the Vikings. Again, not much to do there. Teddy Bridgewater, he's in a Blake Bortles situation where you might play decently, but you got nothing to work with.
Right. I'm a little surprised that the Lions had such an easy time with the Vikings. I don't think the Vikings are good. But I thought a home game against a team like Detroit that's a little bit inconsistent, I thought they'd perform better, but only 3 points, and it was in the fourth quarter at that.
Yeah, and the Lions, I mean, you want to define easy. I mean, they only scored 17 points still. And that's a
right.
Well, Calvin Johnson and Reggie Bush didn't play, right?
Right.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that'll hamper their offense certainly. Keeping with the early games, Patriots and the Bills met up in Buffalo to decide supremacy in the AFC East. The Buffalo Bills, destiny in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Brady wanted to remind us that he's still not on his downside just yet. 361 yards, 4 touchdowns in a 15-point win over the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
Not a circling the wagons type game there for Buffalo.
Not so much, no. They were really never in it, and they just need a quarterback, because I do think they've got some pieces there to work with. They've got a solid defense, but they can't get it done on offense, and that's going to be a problem. And, again, I'm going to say this again, too. Tom Brady, are we ready to sit him down for Jimmy Garoppolo yet, folks? Because that seems to be what people were talking about just 2 short weeks ago.
Yeah, and Kyle Orton wasn't bad either, 299, 2 TDs. But the 3 turnovers for the Bills, that'll right. against the Patriots, that'll kill you.
It's just Buffalo, you know, they're kind of becoming like what the Cardinals used to be. And the fact that it was like, okay, could this be the year they break through? And right about the time we decide, yeah, they're not going to do it, that's the year they'll have a good season. But they're 3 and 3, so that's a pretty good start for them. I think
right.
that they're
still in wild card contention as of today.
Yeah, but, and I think they're a decent team, but the Patriots really kind of gave you a real good idea of who the best team in that division is, too.
Yeah. We'll move to Cincinnati with the cattiest game in the league as the Panthers play the Bengals. I hate this.
Yeah.
I hate this so much. Because you go, okay, so it was actually a pretty entertaining game. Back and forth throughout. Both teams playing extremely well. Andy Dalton, 323, 2 touchdowns. Cam Newton, 284, 2 TDs. 120 yards for Mohamed Sanu, and 137 yards rushing for Giovanni Bernard. Good performance offensively by the Bengals there. And a back and forth with the touchdowns there in the fourth quarter. They're tied. You go into overtime. I think the Bengals got the ball first.
Yes, they did.
No touchdown in the first series. So, okay. Then a field goal will win it. Well, you think. Well, the Panthers get their chance to answer, and nothing happens. The Panthers kick a field goal. Okay, great. But, again, not sudden death anymore.
No. Nope.
So the Bengals get their chance. They kick a field goal. And then there's a lot of nothing that happens during the overtime. And buzzer sounds, and you go shake hands and walk away.
I guess in the long run for the Bengals, this might help because there's one game that they can't lose now.
Right.
They didn't win it, but they can't
lose
it.
They're going to be constantly a half game ahead of the rest of that division, which
you know,
is going to be
like,
insane to look at every week.
Look at last year. A tie is what ended up getting the Green Bay Packers the NFC North last year. So there's that, I suppose. But my question is this. How do you both put up 37 points in regulation and you can't get more than 3 in a 15-minute quarter after that? Come on.
Yeah.
And
well,
this,
I think there you're trying to – I don't know if you're – playing not to lose, or you're playing more conservative offensively because you don't want to give the other team the ball. I think that the overtime rules, we need to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Because this game would have been over on the first field goal.
Well, there's one of two things they have to do here. They either have to go back to the sudden death overtime and just be happy with it, and that's the best we can do, or they've got to go to something similar to college.
Right.
But this...
They have this weird hybrid where it's like, well, if they score, then you still get an opportunity to possess the ball. Well,
unless they score a touchdown. I mean, it's even confusing to people that...
Right. If you're a casual NFL fan and you're watching this game...
Right.
You don't know what's happening. And not to mention because the game went on so long, I believe it was in Seattle. This was the early Fox game. So some Seahawks fans in Oregon... Which, you know, in Seattle itself, the game goes right to the Seahawks-Cowboys game. But in other parts where the Seahawks games are shown, but it's not the primary market, they had to wait until
this was
like
over.
5 minutes into the second quarter.
Right, yeah.
Before the game started. So you're sitting there watching a bunch of, you know, teams being completely ineffective against each other.
Not to mention there are two teams that you probably don't care a thing about.
Right. I mean,
this isn't like this was Packers Giants or something where you might have some rooting interest outside of the two markets.
Right. So congratulations, guys. For the third straight year, we have a tie.
Yeah, wonderful.
And now we have Donovan McNabb on TV, so somebody had to ask him the question. And he does know that football games can end in ties. Somebody on the Bengals didn't know, though, apparently. They were asked after the game.
Of course not. That's amazing to me that you could be in the NFL and not know that.
Right. It's not like it's something that happens all the time. But don't you ask the question, well, what happens after overtime? Oh, it's a tie. Oh.
It's like that phenomenon that you talk to a coach of just about any team and ask them their record. They have no idea.
Yeah.
I just don't know how you wouldn't know that. But yeah,
anyway.
This is – something's got to be done.
Yeah, we gotta fix those overtime rules. But now the Bengals will stay perpetually a half game in front of the rest of the division despite a hard charge from their compatriots to the north. Because nobody circles the wagons like the Cleveland Browns, Greg. 31-10, a 21-point second quarter, and the Browns at home crush the Pittsburgh Steelers for the first time in, what, 18 games?
It's been a long time, yeah. I don't remember the last time the Browns beat the Steelers, but it's been a while. I don't think it's been 18 games. Maybe it has been.
I think it was in the teens.
But this is surprising to me because, okay, the Steelers lost to Tampa Bay at home, so you've got to throw that into the mix. But the Browns, even when they win, they don't normally do it in this fashion.
Right.
And a 31-10, it was a cruising. It was one of those games you just sat back and said, got nothing to worry about here. And that was just an odd feeling. I hadn't felt that since the 80s with the Cleveland Browns.
I think that was their biggest win over the Steelers since, like, 1986.
They beat the Steelers in 1990 in opening week, 51-3.
Okay.
Or 90, or was it 89? I take that back. In 89, they beat them 51-3. So
it was 89, yeah.
Yeah, and that would be probably the biggest win. This has been the biggest win since then. But this was I don't know what to make of these Browns. I think I think I said this on the boards. They have graduated to being pesky this year, which is a real step up from abysmal. So I'm very happy about that.
I mean they have competent play from their quarterback finally in Brian Hoyer.
Right.
They have a legitimate threat in Jordan Cameron. I mean, imagine if this team had Josh Gordon still too.
Well, he'll be back in a few weeks.
They'll get him in a couple of weeks, see how he fits in. And the defense is legitimate.
Yeah.
That's a legitimate NFL defense, which is something they haven't had in a little while. So they're in every game that they played in for the most part. Hell, they could have beat the Steelers in week one.
Right.
In Pittsburgh. So they could – I mean, could you – I don't know if we could live in a world where the Browns were 4-1 and leading the division. But, you know, for now, they're a half game behind the Bengals. And technically, by percentage points, they're behind the Ravens, who are 4-2.
Right.
But, you know, the Ravens will get their bye week, and the Browns will go ahead of them in a second. But, well, assuming they win. But, yeah, you're getting a competent Cleveland Browns team. They're on the way up. This is – progress, like you said.
This doesn't seem like a team like I think they went 10-6 a few years back where
right.
It was one of those things where they did it but you could kind of tell that it wasn't a team that was going to stick. It was kind of like one of those years where everything just broke the right way. This feels different. This feels like they're actually building and headed in the right direction for the first time since they left, really.
Yeah. And let's see, looking at their next week is the game we've all served. Actually, you know what, Greg? Looking at this Cleveland Browns schedule right now, they have an easy path.
Yeah, they got past the tough part of it at 3-2, which is you can't really ask for more. Yeah.
At Jacksonville next week, if that's not a win, then I don't know what is. Home against Oakland, I don't know, you know,
right.
That's a win. Home against Tampa Bay should be another win. They could easily be 6-2 when they go to Cincinnati on a Thursday night in November. The first week in November.
Well, that was the thing. I mean, that was with all the Manziel talk early in the preseason. It was, we'll stick Hoyer out there for the first four or five games because that's a tough part of the schedule. And then if things aren't working well, we'll go to Manziel on the bye week, and that'll be that. Well, guess what? Hoyer's getting the job done. They're 3-2. They've come out of the first five games better than anybody thought they would. And now, all of a sudden, they've got an easy schedule to look at, and who knows?
Right.
Maybe it's a playoff team.
Looking at their schedule the rest of the way, the only games that I don't think are terribly winnable – you know, maybe they win one of the two Cincinnati games. Houston's better. They should beat Atlanta. Buffalo is a maybe. It depends on where they are at that point of the season. That could be a big game when it comes to the wild card down the road.
Yeah.
Then they host the Colts, host Cincinnati again. They go to Carolina and finish up at Baltimore, too. So they're in this thing.
For now, yeah. And
they're very much in this thing.
But what they have to do, just like any team, any playoff team, you have to win the games you're supposed to win. They can't drop a game to Jacksonville or to Oakland.
No, they have to win these next three games.
Or who was the third one?
Tampa Bay.
Yeah, you've got to win all three of those, because if you don't, that you just have to. That's just the only way you're going to get it done, because you're not going to cruise through the rest of that schedule when you've got Cincinnati a couple times yet. Baltimore's still out there. The Colts are on there. Houston's going to be a tough game. Yeah, they've got to get it done in these next three.
One thing to finish up with the Browns Steelers here is, what do you make of the Steelers? I mean, they were kind of decent in the games they're winning, and then they lose to Tampa Bay at home. They lose to the Browns on the road. They almost lost to the Browns in week one, but yet they're still 3-3, so they're kind of hanging around for the time being. I mean, they're well on their way to doing exactly what they did last year and barely missing the playoffs based on tiebreakers and stuff, but
I think they're a team.
How long does this Pittsburgh team stay together with, as it is?
Well,
before they just break it down and try over.
They've got a good quarterback. They've got a pretty good running back, and they've got a few players. What I think is going to hurt them the most is they don't have a lot of depth. If Le'Veon Bell goes down to an injury, then what? The defense is not what a Pittsburgh defense normally is. So this is probably what they're going to be. You're going to see them win some games. You're going to see them lose, and they're going to be a lot like last year where, realistically, if they can go 9-7, that's probably a really good year for the talent they have available. But they could just as easily end up 6-10, 5-11. So,
and they still have a very good receiving threat in Antonio Brown.
Right.
And I think really where the area, if the Steelers can turn that around quickly, is the defense, because that was the key to those great Steeler teams of the past decade or so.
Right.
And all those guys have either retired or are on the way out. I mean, Troy Polamalu is like the last vestige of that, and he's pretty old,
right?
For a football player.
Yeah, and normally the Steelers, what they've always been good at as an organization, going all the way back to their 70s Super Bowl dynasty teams, they were able to plug in new guys as other guys left. They've never been a team to sign big free agents. They've never been a team to spend a lot of money, but there are going to be times where the moves you make like that aren't going to work out, and I think they're in a phase like that right now, but this is an organization that, if I'm a Steelers fan, I'm not too worried. Yeah, they might have a year or two like this, but they'll be right back at it before you know it. But this is just one of those seasons where they're not necessarily rebuilding, but they're in transition at this point. And they're going to play like a transitional team, which they're going to win some, they're going to lose some.
Sure. We'll move on from your hometown team to your team, the one that you physically own.
That's right.
The Green Bay Packers travel down to Miami. A back-and-forth game, really kind of aided by three turnovers by the Dolphins. But Packers down late in the game. They're driving. They're trying to beat the clock. And they're out of timeouts, Greg.
Yes.
What are they going to do? They got to get the ball. They got to spike it. They got to get this thing going. They get a good out going down the line. But, oh, God, the clock's ticked, ticked, ticked. Rodgers goes up, makes the spiking motion, takes the ball, doesn't spike it, gets his receiver open in the end zone for the touchdown, and in Dan Marino's house, Greg, they pull off the fake spike play and beat the Dolphins 27-24. The Packers still tied on top of the NFC North with a big late victory by Rodgers.
Well, first off, the fake spike play was a pass that got him down to the six, and the receiver went out of bounds.
Well,
they scored on the next play, but here's what I want to say about the
semantics.
First off, the Dolphins.
It was more exciting in my version.
Yeah, it really was. But the Dolphins won this game everywhere but the scoreboard. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, and I think the Packers really got lucky in this game, because that when he threw the fake spike play, that was the dumbest play they could have run, because if Miami plays that correctly, the game's over.
Yeah.
It's done and over. That's it. So
I think you kind of see it when Rodgers looks up for a second, everybody stopped moving.
Right.
And I don't know if he would have that already planned, or he just looked up, saw it, and then went with it, because nobody else moved except for the receiver.
Right.
So, he definitely could have been in a bad spot, because you can't throw that one to the ground. That's intentional grounding. So he would have had to throw it out of bounds, I guess, and hope that you have a few seconds left on the clock. But
yeah, because what my understanding of it was is that no one knew except Aaron Rodgers, and I guess there's a hand signal he uses with the receiver if they're going to try that. And he gave the signal and went for it. But where they got the real break is I think Aaron Rodgers is one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL, but that was just a dumb move to make in that situation. It worked out.
Ballsy.
It was ballsy for sure, but it worked out, and they ended up winning the game. But that could have been a disaster. So I think it's great that they pulled it off. I feel bad for the Dolphins because, like I said, they won that game everywhere but the scoreboard. The Packers, they just got lucky. I mean, there's no other way to put it. And it's great, and they're 4-2, but wow, it was just a lot of luck involved in that one. So
yeah, with the Dolphins, this is a team that I know at least I had a little bit more faith in. I thought they would.
So did I.
Better than what they've shown. And that's a game where you're at home, you're leading, you can't let that play happen.
No.
You just cannot let that happen to you. And, you know, that's one of those games that keeps you from being a contending team. And now they're 2-3. They're third place in the AFC East behind the freaking Buffalo Bills.
Right.
You know, they're not much better than the Jets at this point. But
well, that's the thing. You can't let a game that you've basically won get away from you like that.
Yeah.
And expect that killed them. I mean, it really did. But they played well. They just, you know, they fell asleep. And Miami, of all teams, should know not to fall for that play.
Right? You got to think Dan Marino somewhere like, guys, come on. I showed you this.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll move on. Chargers with a big, not big, but tight win over the Raiders. 31-28 in Oakland. Oakland is now 0-5. Do you see the little trick that Tony Sparano tried to pull during the week?
No.
To motivate his guys.
Oh, with burying the football?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, kind of cheesy.
Kind of cheesy. Didn't work.
But, you know, it almost did, though. You know, the Chargers had to pull this one out late, but, you know, the Raiders, they made something of it at the very least. And the Chargers bus got egged on the way in. That's the other notable thing from this game. But still, I mean, it's the result everyone thought, just not the way it would play out. So good effort, Raiders.
Yeah.
Hope you show that same kind of fight when you're in San Antonio.
It was a moral victory, I guess. Who do the Chargers have next week? Because I'm looking at this thinking, was this a trap game? What happened here? Because they really shouldn't have had this much trouble with the Oakland Raiders.
They go to Kansas City. Or they host Kansas City.
Okay, so maybe a little bit. Not quite like it would have been last year, but yeah. Well,
they host Kansas City, and then the week after, on Thursday, they go to Denver.
Ooh.
So that'll be the big one for them.
But yeah, Chargers 5-1, looking good so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, aren't they technically ahead of the Broncos right now?
I don't know.
I have the standings open. Where'd they go? That's the scores. Where are my standings?
They haven't played each other yet, right?
No, San Diego's 5-1 because Denver had the bye.
That's right, right. Okay, yeah, right.
So San Diego has a late bye. I think it's week 10 they have their bye. So technically, yes, they're actually on top of the entire AFC, technically, with their 5-1 record. So they're a contender.
I like this team this year. They don't have Norv Turner to screw things up.
They don't.
They don't have Marty Schottenheimer to get too conservative in the playoffs. So who knows? This might be a year they actually make a run. We'll see.
The other interesting thing, the leading rusher for the Chargers on Sunday was Brandon Oliver. I think it's Brandon. Brandon Oliver. 26 rushes for 101 yards. The reason Brandon Oliver is interesting is because he's all of 5'7", and he's a shifty, small running back who wears number 43 for the San Diego Chargers. Did that before, rhymes with Darren Sproles?
Yeah, I was going to say, they've got a thing for the little guy running backs, I guess.
So you look at the highlights and you're like, Darren Sproles is on the Chargers still? And it's like, no, that's Brandon Oliver. So, little interesting tidbit. And I guess somebody asked him about it this week, like, why did you wear Darren Sproles' number? He's like, well, there was only two options. I either had 44 or 43, and I didn't like the way 44 looked, so.
Yeah, he's too small. He's too small to wear 44. He's too small to wear 43, too, but. But 44 is
too small to be playing professional football.
Probably, yeah.
But, you get one bad hit and you're just set to the moon.
Yeah. But you got to find him amongst all the big people though to even grab him to hit him. But yeah,
exactly.
He the 44, that's a big guy number, and I can understand why he wouldn't go with it. So that was a good choice.
We'll move on. Andy's Bears.
This was a shocker.
Falcons in Atlanta.
This was a shocker. It was, yeah.
We know we thought Atlanta was probably going to be one of those teams that just went undefeated at home, and that was the end of it. But big win by there. Some fight shown by Jay Cutler and the Bears, 381, and a touchdown for Cutler. Alshon Jeffrey, 5 receptions, 136 yards. And a good showing there for the Bears to show that they're still alive, and they're not just going to walk out the rest of the season.
I still think this Bears team has got a shot at making the playoffs. I think they're capable of winning games, and they've shown it here. I would have never in a million years expected the Bears to win a 27-13 game in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. If they went 48-41, yeah, I could see that. But this surprised me at a bunch of different levels. What happened to that Falcons offense that had just been lighting it up at home? They put 13 points on the board. That was it.
I don't know what to do with the Falcons. I just don't.
I'm with you. I thought they were going to be good at home, and maybe they get one or two road wins, and it puts them in playoff contention. I don't think so. No, I don't think they're a very good team.
No, it's
a lot of problems
on
defense.
They're a very disappointing group.
Yeah,
very very disappointing overall. The Falcons are, but good win better by the Bears to stay alive. Staying with the afternoon or the later games because it's not your afternoon. It's your evening games, I guess. We'll save the best one for last. We'll go first to Glendale, to the Giant Toaster Oven, where the Cardinals dispatched the visiting Washington team 30-20. Carson Palmer came back there for the Cardinals, 250 yards and 2 TDs. Kirk Cousins, pretty damn good effort, 354 yards, 2 touchdowns, but not enough. 4 turnovers for Washington in the game, and that was the game. And the other interesting thing, as I struggle to avoid saying the team's name. Dan Snyder was at the game, of course, because he owns the team.
Right.
He had a very honorable guest in his box for the game.
Please tell me.
President of the Navajo Nation.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Well, here's the thing. He's a lame duck president of the Navajo Nation. He lost the primary vote back in August. So he's not going to be reelected. But he – and one of the reasons why the Navajo Nation did not reelect him is because he's had public support for Dan Snyder and the team name in the past. So
Dan Snyder –
the tribal council of the Navajo voted 9-2 in April to formally oppose the name. But the guy, Ben Shelley, he's been charged with fraud, conspiracy, and theft all the while, publicly supporting Dan Snyder, and partnered with the Original Americans Foundation to host a golf tournament.
Oh, my God. See, Dan Snyder can't even get this right. He tries to go out and exploit a Native American, and turns out he gets a guy that's like this.
And of course, you see the picture of them in the box. They're both – him and his wife are wearing brand-new Washington hats, which are clearly just, generic snapbacks, and – instead of just having the logo on it like most hats do, they have the logo and the word mark underneath the logo
to
be extremely explicit about what they're talking about.
Well, that's the thing, and I just don't get it. I mean, Dan Snyder, even if this guy was legit, it doesn't change the fact that you really need to change that name. I just don't understand why he's being so stubborn about this. He would be a hero if he would just go, you know what, you guys are right. Let's change it and move forward. And I don't think anybody would get upset. I mean, you'd get a few fans of the Washington team. I almost said the name there, but
yeah, well, we're trying.
I'm not going to make any guarantees. We'll do my best. Let's just put it that way. But he can't even get this right. Way to go, Dan. Good job.
Anyway, but back on the field, Kirk Cousins still played pretty well.
Yeah.
But the rest of the Redskins aren't good.
No.
The 1-5 now. 0-3 on the road. It's just there's nothing there. I kind of feel bad for Jay Gruden, the coach, to be put in this situation where he's trying, but there's not anything to do with it.
You've got a good quarterback in Kirk Cousins. You've got a pretty good receiver.
Should have been playing the whole time.
Right. Yeah, that would have made a big difference, I think. But you've got a good quarterback in Cousins. You've got a decent receiver in DeSean Jackson. You've got a pretty good running back in Alfred Morris. What else do they have? That's their biggest problem.
Is London Fletcher still playing defense?
If he is, he's got to be my age by now. He was on the Rams team that won in 99, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would make him, a 15-year vet at this point. So even if he is, he's an old guy. But I think that I think Cousins is, you know, they're headed in the right direction. Well, I don't know. Alfred Morris, 13 rushes for 41 yards. He's in Trent Richardson territory there. But,
yeah, right.
But, yeah, they're just – there's nothing there there. They've got a couple of good skill players, and that's about it. And the Cardinals, 4-1. Look at them go.
Yeah. They're in first place.
Yes, they are.
A whole game.
Yeah.
In the NFC West, thanks to something we'll talk about here in just a second. But
they're not giving us a choice, are they?
No. I was actually pretty surprised that Carson Palmer came back. Because I thought Drew Stanton had played well for the Cardinals up to this point, and
right.
I thought Palmer was should have played last week if he was ready, but you know he's still in there and got Larry Fitzgerald another touchdown pass.
Yeah, so. and with in the case of Palmer versus Stanton, I mean I think they're pretty much their numbers are pretty similar at this point.
Yeah.
So all things being equal, probably the smarter move to go with the more experienced player, I would
say. Right, because he hasn't played bad yet this year.
Right.
So
Bruce Arians is their head coach now, right, in Arizona?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see how they kind of progress as the season goes along. But for now, they're the first place Arizona Cardinals because, well, the best team in the NFC on the road to Seattle?
Let's just stop for a second.
The Seahawks?
I want to point this out really quick.
Yes.
I'm going to say one thing that sounds crazy if I'd said it a month and a half ago. The Kansas City Royals swept their way into the World Series today. That was the first thing.
Yes.
The next crazy thing I'm going to say that would have sounded ridiculous had I said it in August, the Dallas Cowboys are 5-1 with the best record in the NFC.
They're 3-0 on the road, are the Cowboys.
Yes.
Including this win in the impenetrable fortress that is CenturyLink Field in Seattle. A 30-23 win for the Cowboys. DeMarco Murray, 29 rushes, 115 yards. He has been the engine for this Cowboys team, controlled the ball. You know, you look at the possession numbers every single week, and the Cowboys are beating whoever they play by at least 15 minutes in time of possession, simply because they're able to churn it out on the ground with DeMarco Murray, and he gets them in position. It keeps the ball in their hands, and Tony Romo is being the good version of Tony Romo, very effective, limiting his forcing of the throws and the turnovers, and... You know, I mean, hell, they're able to run with like 8 or 9 guys in the box are the Cowboys.
Yeah.
So they're impressive, more and much more impressive than I've ever thought. And something that I don't think we would have said earlier, you know who won the game here for the Cowboys?
Their defense.
Beyond DeMarco Murray? Their defense.
Yes.
They had that game-ending interception, something I wouldn't have said, you know, before the season when we thought that they were just going to be shredded all year.
Well, I think what we thought going in was that any game that they would win, it would be like the game they played against the Broncos last year. What, 51-48 was the final?
Yeah, something
I think
like
they lost still, but
yes.
But we thought that they would put up a lot of points and give up a lot of points. But the defense, now I don't know if it's just a bunch of young guys coming together and figuring it out all at once, but I got to be honest, these guys look pretty good. Now, granted, they really haven't played anybody up until Seattle, but still, you go into Seattle and get a win on the road, that's you know, that's a good feather to put in your hat. I don't care.
That's a statement win.
It actually is, yeah. And I think they're good. I got to admit. They're 5-1.
And by the way, DeMarco Murray, on his own, is the fourth leading rusher among team rushing in the league. and that's including Dallas. So if you take Dallas out, you just put DeMarco Murray, he has the third highest rushing total. Pittsburgh and Baltimore are ahead, but DeMarco Murray has 159 rushes for 785 yards all on his own so far.
Wow, what's he on pace for at this point? Has he got a shot at breaking the record for the season?
I don't know. The thing is, they're giving him a huge workload.
Yeah, and that's going to be tough to maintain for 16 games.
Exactly. They've either got to slow it down here at some point, or he's going to slow down. And as good as the Cowboys have looked, if DeMarco Murray starts to fall off, this Cowboy team is going to fall off because they're going to ask Tony Romo to do more. And we've seen in the past what happens when you ask Tony Romo to do more. He, you know, makes mistakes.
Right now, they look like a good team, but it's a very precarious good team.
Yes.
Meaning if one little thing goes wrong, it could really head south in a hurry. But as much as we didn't want to, I've got to give them some credit. I think that win, that surprised me because I thought, okay, this is where the clock strikes midnight on the Dallas Cowboys, is when they go to Seattle. But they won, and it wasn't a fluke. They dominated that game, and they beat the Seattle Seahawks, as simple as that. So,
yes.
Good job.
Yep. And I think the other thing to point out already, as we did every single year, we had the Cowboys already pegged for 8-8, right?
Right.
They're 5-1. They're more than halfway to 8-8. They're more than halfway to 9-7. They're halfway to 10-6. You know, and if I don't expect them to keep this pace up over the next, you know,
let's look at their upcoming schedule and just see how far they could go with this bit.
Well, okay.
I'm just curious because they
let's indulge. So they host the Giants this week.
Okay, now the Giants have played decent football. That's a game that they could lose.
But the Giants, and they always do play well in Dallas.
Right.
Then they host Washington on Monday night the next week.
I got to think that's an easy win for the Cowboys. Yeah.
Then they host Arizona the week after that.
That's going to be a real test.
Yep. Then they go to Jacksonville.
Okay.
Before the bye.
Hmm.
And then coming out of the bye, they have at the Giants, home against Philly, at Chicago, at Philly, home against Indy, and they finish up with Washington.
Well, you know, they very well could fall right back down to the 8-8, 9-7.
Yeah, I mean,
territory.
when you come out of the bye at the Giants, give or take, but then you have Philly, Chicago, Philly, Indy.
Yeah,
that'll be a tough stretch.
That's a tough stretch.
I mean, that's going in to finish off the season. So if the Cowboys are going to be playoff ready, they're going to have to make it through that stretch, and we'll see how they can get through there. But I still think, as presently presented, they're probably at least a wild card team at the very least. In the NFC.
If the defense can play the way it's played up to this point, yeah, I think so. And if they can keep DeMarco Murray healthy and upright and keep playing the kind of offensive football they're playing, mm-hmm. I think they've got a shot at winning the division. But it's one of, like I said, it's a precarious good team. It's a lot of things have to break their way. They've got to stay healthy and all that. But right now, I got to think that everybody's shocked that they're 5-1 at this point. I don't think anybody expected this.
No, definitely. Or they're doing something more and more Cowboys-like, where they're going to pump everybody up. They're going to get all those Cowboys fans out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
They're going to start coming out and saying, "How about them Cowboys?" And then all of a sudden, they're going to be, you know,
yeah,
they're going to end up being 7-9.
Well, all we know for sure at this point is that Tony Romo hasn't thrown that interception just yet.
He kind of did it against San Francisco.
Well, yeah, but he hasn't ended their season yet, but he's still very well could. He's still
not
very
yet.
Well could.
Not yet. But, yeah, so the Cowboys 5-1, best record in the NFC, tied with their division mate, the Philadelphia Eagles, who made a mockery of the Giants there on Sunday night, 27-0. First shutout for the Eagles in 18 years, as the Eagles, again, still can't wear their green jerseys, so they wore all black.
They looked horrible.
Yeah.
Just awful. I mean, if you got to do that, at least wear the white pants. I understand that the all-white's probably getting a little old and tired, but good Lord, there's just no excuse for the whole black thing. I'm sorry.
I mean, the Eagles just keep doing what they're doing. Nick Foles, 248, two TDs. LeSean McCoy, 22 rushes for 149 yards. You know, just a good game there for the Eagles. Just
and a shutout. You know how hard a shutout is to get in the NFL these days, if you think about
it? Yeah, pretty difficult.
Yeah, so.
Like I said, it's their first in 18 years. And the other thing with the Eagles, it's their bye week this week, so they took their team photo. And Chip Kelly, I don't know if he was being facetious or not during his press conference. I think it was yesterday. But he said, we got the whole thing. They got all the team pictures done, all the position groups, all the headshots, all everything done in 4 minutes and 41 seconds.
No way.
That's what he was saying. He said that the guys came in, some of them were wearing their pads in the meetings. They just went out to the field, got lined up, took the picture. And he was saying that the photographers were like slowing it down. He's like, "Nope, we got to get this thing moving. Come on, next picture." So the photographers were kind of confused. I don't know how true or not that is. But at least he's saying and keeping up with the theme that the Eagles play fast.
Yeah. All right. I'd have to see that to believe it.
I don't know if it was all the headshots, but I know they did. He said they did team photo and then the position groups and the coaches and out.
Okay.
Supposedly.
Well, hey, well done. You know, they do everything fast there.
They do. But we'll finish up with Monday Night Football. The Rams looked like they were in this game early. They looked like they were going to have something to say about being really bad and just moving themselves to L.A. early. 14-0 after the first quarter, but slowly but surely the 49ers defense kicked in. Austin Davis played more and more like Austin Davis.
Right.
And the kind of almost pro 49ers crowd started to get behind the San Francisco 49ers on the road, so they come out with the 31-17 victory. It was actually pretty close there at the end, and they the Rams on their final drive threw a pick six to essentially end the game there at 31-17.
Is this the first time that we've ever had where it was St. Louis, San Francisco, and both baseball and football on the same?
Right, yeah, huh?
I
don't think it's the first time. I think somebody outlined it that it's happened before. It was interesting because we were concerned that, like last year, they were going to have their Monday night game on the same night as a Cardinals home playoff game, and they avoided that. But the stands were still pretty red, and not Cardinal red either.
It's really just time to call it a day.
Steve Young throughout the broadcast was calling out the amount of 49er fans and basically saying that, yeah, this team needs to leave now.
Well, let's be honest about it for a second here. They're never going to be the top team in that market. They're probably at best, they might maybe supplant the Blues as number two, but it sure doesn't look like it at this point. Well, yeah, when you're winning and you're going to Super Bowls and stuff, of course everybody's going to love you. People are going to come out in droves. We're seeing it in Kansas City with baseball right now.
Yeah.
But when they're this bad in a baseball market like St. Louis and the Blues have got a good following, it's just not going to work. There's a reason the Cardinals left back in, what was it, 88. I mean, there's a reason that they left. It's not a good football market, so it's time to go.
Yeah, and, they were lucky by getting a Super Bowl-ready team when they first moved there. But outside of that, not a whole lot to write about when it comes to St. Louis Rams history.
And real quick on the 49ers, I was ready to write them off. They're now 4-2 and in second place, so they're hanging tough.
They're right there.
They got to be really excited. They scored 21 points in the second half.
Yeah. And
that's big news in San Francisco these days.
Yeah. Also, of note, the Rams wore their glorious throwbacks, which is too bad that the NFL won't wear them wear matching helmets anymore, but they did their best.
Yeah, but you know what? I didn't think the helmets looked like any really that much different than the helmets they normally wear with those uniforms. They've never matched. They might have looked a shade or two darker this time around, but for the most part, it looked pretty similar. I like them okay, but being the traditional throwback guy that I am,
not
my favorites. And I'm not even going to talk about the blue and whites, my beloved blue and whites.
We'll just send them all the way back to Cleveland, and you can do whatever you want with them.
There we go. I would love that. But I'm like the only person, and they bring the Rams back home where they belong club. But but of the two uniform choices they have right now, I actually prefer their current look to the throwbacks that they wore on Monday night. So I'm one of the few, but I think it's a good look as long as they don't mess with it and wear those stupid blue pants. I mean, if they do with the blue over gold, white over gold, it's a really good look. But anyway, I digress.
Anyway, that's the NFL for now. Your division leaders, Philly and Dallas are tied. Detroit and Green Bay tied 4-2. Carolina on top of the NFC South 3-2-1. Arizona's 4-1, a half game ahead of San Francisco and a full game ahead of Seattle. New England on top 4-2 in the AFC East. Cincinnati's on top by a half game over Baltimore and Cleveland, 3-1-1. Is Cleveland – Cleveland's a game behind because they have the one down the loss column and then
so it's like a full game.
So they're like three-fourths.
Three-fourths. They're three-quarters of a game out. I want to see that in the standings.
I hate that so much.
In the standings and the games behind thing, I want to see it say 0.75. That would be hysterical.
Well, because that's what it is.
More or less, yeah.
Because normally it's just a half game, but they're a half game behind because of the bye week. And then I don't know, because it's not another half. It's, I don't know. I hate math.
Anyway.
Indy's on top of the AFC South 4-2, and San Diego is the best team record-wise in the AFC, 5-1, a half game over the Denver Broncos.
San Diego Superchargers.
San Diego. I used to have a keychain that you could press a button and it would play that song.
Awesome.
Got it at a Charger game once.
Awesome.
I lost it, but
that's
one of the endearing parts of going to a Chargers game is the Superchargers song.
Now, if they just had the uniforms to match, we'd really have something.
Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to them just wearing the light blue all the time, but they got to tinker with it. Got to be modern. Got to be special.
For some reason, their owner doesn't like that light blue, and I don't care if you don't like it. That's the one that sells.
He also doesn't want to move to Los Angeles, or doesn't want someone to move to Los Angeles because it'll destroy the Chargers fan base up there.
Oh, please. Come on.
We'll go back to school. We'll go to college. We'll start with number one, Florida State. Not as easy of a win as it should have been, but they won 38-20 over Syracuse at Syracuse. It's just kind of really one of the epitomes of this Florida State team this year. They're 6-0. They're defending national champs, and they're winning, but not terribly impressive in their victories.
This team could fall pretty quick here if some things don't work out the way they would like them to with Jameis Winston. First off, if you're talking about the autograph thing, I don't think that the NCAA should have any say in that whatsoever, but there's stuff about the sexual assault things that are starting to come back up again, so we'll see.
According to Jimbo Fisher, nothing's changed and it's all the same.
I already
knew this stuff. But
I heard today on the Dan Patrick Show that Vegas has taken that game off the board.
Really?
It probably doesn't mean anything other than they don't know if Winston's going to play or not. And once that's decided, they'll put it right back up. But yeah.
If it's showed anything the way they've handled this stuff, outside of banning him for that one game because of what he said in the cafeteria, he's going to play.
More than likely.
They played him all last year when this stuff was going on too. So
yeah.
But anyway, we'll move on to the big clash of the weekend. Number two, Auburn, goes down to Stark Vegas, Mississippi, Starkville, for Mississippi State to come in, and they got on Auburn quick. Auburn had two turnovers in their first two plays, which Mississippi State then turned into two touchdowns, and they were up 21-0 after the first quarter. Auburn was able to piece some things together and get back into the game as the rain started to open up and pour down there on that game. And a tight second half, both teams score only 10 points. So Mississippi State is able to hold on and defeat number two Auburn, 38-23. And with that win, with a very impressive win at home over a team that a lot of people thought was probably the best team in the country, hadn't voted it so, but they were slowly coming up the charts, getting closer and closer to Florida State. Mississippi State beats them, and they leapfrog Florida State into the number one position in a landslide in terms of first place votes. Mississippi State, 45 first place votes, Florida State, 12. And there's a new number one in college football, and I think this one is finally well-deserved.
The Mississippi State Bulldogs are ranked number one in college football.
I know, right?
Let me back up again.
What's going on in sports right now?
I'm going to say it again. I'm going to back up and start from the beginning. Kansas City Royals are your American League champions.
Yes.
The Dallas Cowboys are 5-1, and the Mississippi State Bulldogs are ranked number one in college football.
Mm-hmm.
Not making any of that up.
No,
for those of you that may have been under a rock for the last 6 weeks or whatever, all of that is true. That's
not only is Mississippi State the number one team in the land, but the number three team in the land, also from Mississippi, as Ole Miss goes to Texas A&M in front of a record crowd at Texas A&M. I don't know why, of all games, this would be a record crowd for the Aggies. But Ole Miss goes in 21-0 at the half. They end up winning that game 35-20. And Texas A&M taking a little slip down the rankings. They'll probably be better once they get a defense, hopefully next year. But Ole Miss, the number three team in the country. Two of the top three teams are from Mississippi. What is going on?
Well, let me ask you this. Of the two Mississippi wins, both of which I said on basically a sports show wouldn't happen this week, of the two, which one surprises you more? That Mississippi State beat Auburn or that Ole Miss beat Texas A&M?
Mississippi State beating Auburn.
See, I'm the other way. I think the Ole Miss game surprises me a little bit more because Mississippi State's got that offense. It just, you know, but not to say that Mississippi State beating Auburn was like, well, yeah, I knew that was going to happen all along. But I think that the Ole Miss game surprised me a little bit more because they were on the road, whereas Mississippi State was at home. So,
true. Yeah.
But,
yeah, you're probably right.
In any case, you're right. We've got two Mississippi teams at number one and number three, and I'm not so sure they shouldn't be one and two at this point.
Right. And the thing, now that they've gotten those two big games out of the way, things are kind of clearer for both of them as to what they need to do. And honestly, it's easier for Ole Miss, I think, because Mississippi State, they're at Kentucky this week. Kentucky is shown. Kentucky's 5-1.
Are they pesky?
They're pesky.
Pesky is tough, as Cleveland's showing you. Yeah.
Kentucky's 5-1, and that's at home. So I don't want to.
Wait. Back up a second here. Kentucky's 5-1. Ole Miss and Mississippi State are 1-3.
Yeah.
And South Carolina, are they even ranked anymore?
No.
Yeah.
Kentucky's not ranked either.
But still, I mean, come on.
Yeah, so they got to go into Kentucky next week. Then they host Arkansas. They host University of Tennessee, Martin. But there's two big games left up for the schedule. I mean, including the Kentucky game, you can say three. But they go to Alabama and to Ole Miss in the last game of the season. Whereas Ole Miss, they host Tennessee this week. They're at LSU. Then they host Auburn. And there's Presbyterian. They're at Arkansas. And they host the Egg Bowl against Mississippi State.
Yeah, because Ole Miss has gotten Alabama out of the way already.
Right. Ole Miss already beat Alabama. Whereas Mississippi State, and honestly, I think it's better that Ole Miss played Alabama early, because now Alabama's got the time. They got the chink in the armor. They get to, you know, kind of rebuild themselves and start charging back towards, because Alabama only one loss. All these other teams are still playing each other. Alabama's still in a good position.
Oh, they're still poised. Both Alabama and Auburn, I think. And
well, yeah, because Alabama still has to play. Alabama has to play Ole Miss, or not Ole Miss. Alabama has to play Mississippi State. And Auburn still, and then so all these teams are still playing against each other. Anything could still happen in the SEC West with all these just phenomenally good teams playing against each other. But as opposed to the two undefeated teams, Ole Miss and Mississippi State, Ole Miss has the more advantageous route with hosting Auburn and hosting Mississippi State rather than going on the road like Mississippi State has to do.
Yeah, so. I agree with that, and. I keep looking at this, and it's just not registering with me. And again, we talked about it last week. The Egg Bowl may have huge national title implications this year.
If both of those teams can get through the rest of this gauntlet and get to that point undefeated.
That game's bigger than the Iron Bowl this year.
Even if they're not undefeated, even if they're both one-loss teams.
Right.
Because Alabama and Auburn will be one-loss teams at that point.
Exactly.
Or maybe two loss. But yeah, because if they both end up with just one loss going down there, that last weekend of the season in the SEC where you have the Iron Bowl and the Egg Bowl going on, probably one after the other, that's going to be some high-pressure, high-intensity pressure cooker type college football. That'll be fun.
Yeah, because, nothing's in my – and look, I'm an Ohio State fan with the Michigan rivalry, but I'll be honest with you. When Auburn and Alabama are both good, there isn't a better game in the world than the Iron Bowl. I'm sorry.
I mean, that game last year and even 2 years ago with Cam Newton, it's just that's the best. It really is the best in college football.
I apologize to all of my Ohio State fans and fellow alumni, and I apologize to Michigan fans, but I'm sorry, but we rank number two to this rivalry. It's just as simple as that.
When Michigan and Ohio State are both good, like a few years ago when they were both undefeated playing that final game of the year, that was good.
Yeah,
but it's a different type of blood feud.
I think it runs a hell of a lot deeper with Auburn and Alabama than it does with Michigan and Ohio State. I really do.
Definitely.
But it's going to be exciting. I mean, God, it's just even with the playoff where a loss isn't lethal like it used to be, this is still going to be damn exciting going the rest of the way in here.
You know, I mean, the way this looks, can we just have a 14 playoff between Auburn and Alabama and the Mississippi schools? Like, can we just forget everybody else and do that?
Well, in all honesty, of those top seven teams, those are probably the top four, really.
Really?
If you really think Baylor, they're going to score some points,
Baylor
maybe.
Baylor can score. Baylor, and we'll talk about them next. But, well, you know what, let's go to them right now. We'll talk about the Baylor Bears. And it was a basketball score.
Yeah.
In Waco. TCU and Baylor, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Baylor or TCU goes up 21 late, but Baylor rallies back with 24 unanswered points there in the fourth quarter to go on ahead and win just a crazy insane game, 61-58. So it's no question that Baylor can put up the points. Defense, though, I don't even know if you want to say that because this is a Big 12 problem, like across the board.
Right.
It's not just that, well, maybe the offenses are too good. No, the offenses are very good. There's no denying that. They can't play defense, though.
Well, here's the thing. Do you really think that – I mean, look, I'm not taking anything away from TCU. They're a good football team, but are they a 58-point-a-game offense? I don't think so.
How much did they put up last week? Like 48? 50, I think they put up 51 last week.
Did they?
Against Oklahoma, yeah.
Okay, well, then maybe they are. But my impression of TCU has always been good defensively, good enough on offense. So based on
that, I think the thing with TCU, at least what I saw during that game, they're entirely uncreative when it comes to offense.
Okay.
I saw them run the same fade route on the goal line and elsewhere, like, I don't know, 15 times. Same guy, same play, same lineup. And they just kept doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it. And yes, it connected sometimes, but they got into these tight situations where if they had scored on a couple of those instead of doing the same thing over and over again, they should have beat Baylor. They were better than Baylor in this game. And like I said, they were up 21 points in the fourth quarter, and they couldn't close it out.
Well, here's – okay, looking at their schedule, okay, they scored 48 against Samford. All right, so that – everybody's going to do that against Samford.
Sure.
They beat Minnesota 30-7. SMU, who's not a good team either, they beat 56-0. Oklahoma, they scored 37. So, yeah, they can score some points, but I still don't think – I think that if I'm a Baylor fan, I'm more worried that TCU scored 58 on me than I am happy about getting the win in a 61-58 game.
And that's the most they've given up all year. Before that, the most they've given up was 28 to Iowa State on the road.
Iowa State who beat my Rockets this week, but we won't get into that.
And, I mean, even the week before, they were at Texas, and they only beat them 28-7. And based on the way Texas has played this year, that should have been a bigger blowout.
But yeah, I think Baylor's fun if you like that
fun.
Kind of thing.
Yeah,
but
they're a video game team.
Yeah, but I don't really think that they're in the same league as the two Mississippis, Auburn, Alabama. I'm not even so sure how they'd fare against Michigan State, but we'll see. It's going to be nutty, and we've got a big game. Well, I'll let you get to it, but we've got a big game coming up here at number 5.
Yeah, well, next up on the docket is the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Ooh, they sustained a pretty big scare there from North Carolina, of all teams, in South Bend. But they were able to hang out there at the end with, no defense at all being played in this game. A 50-43 win for Notre Dame. Here's the thing with Notre Dame. They can score points. Their defense is up and down. If Everett Golson could ever hold on to the football, this team would be a heck of a lot better. And this week they got to go to Tallahassee to play Florida State.
Right.
Now, if Notre Dame can go into Tallahassee and beat Florida State, yes, they're a good team, and they're probably going to make the playoff at that point, assuming they don't trip up against, like USC or Boston College or something. But
I don't see Notre Dame.
I'm totally unimpressed with them.
I am too. I mean, I think they're – if I had to put them in a category, it's like a good Big Ten team.
Yeah,
they're good against teams that are at that level, but you put them up with the big boys, and they're going to have a lot of problems. And I think we're going to see that this Saturday, because even Florida State, who I don't think has been as impressive, I still think they're a hell of a lot better than Notre Dame.
Yeah.
So if Notre Dame can win this one, then I might get on board. But right now, I'm with you. They're just not impressive.
The thing that's going to really kind of screw with the rankings, I think, too, is if Florida State beats Notre Dame like convincingly, because they're Notre Dame. People are going to put more stock into it, and they're going to put Florida State back at number one.
Yeah, that could be.
Because Mississippi State, does Mississippi State even play this week? I don't know. They don't. And Ole Miss plays Tennessee. So
I don't know, though. I mean, here they are. But they're undefeated, which is a big part of why they're ranked number 5.
Yeah.
I got to think the voters, though, this is – Notre Dame hasn't been, quote-unquote, Notre Dame in a long time. So I don't know if the voters are as swayed by the name as they used to be.
Because you look at 2 years ago.
That's
when
true.
They played Alabama. Yes, they were undefeated. And I think they were the only two undefeated teams in the country were Alabama and Notre Dame.
Right.
And so you can make the argument that, yeah, they deserve to play there. But when they got on the field with Alabama, it wasn't even a contest.
No, it really wasn't.
There was no doubt who was the better football team.
Well,
so, I think the name, despite them not being good as of recent – who are the people to vote in the AP poll? Old white guys.
This is true.
Part, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And who loves themselves from Notre Dame?
Old white guys.
Old white guys love Notre Dame. My grandfather, he loves Notre Dame. Loves watching the Irish every week. Didn't go to Notre Dame. Doesn't know anyone that went to Notre Dame. Loves Notre Dame.
Yeah. Well, that was like America's team for a long time back in the day. So we'll see. I don't know if... I don't know how good Florida State is, though, either. I mean, it might be closer than we think.
That's why this – I mean, it's easily the best game of the upcoming week. Not a whole lot when it comes to anybody else. Barely any ranked teams playing against each other. You have some teen Big 12 teams playing against each other, but those are going to be – I can guarantee you both those games are probably going to be 55-47.
Right.
with somebody winning. But it's the best game of the week. It's the ABC Sunday night game against two teams that I don't know what to do with. Yeah, they're undefeated, but if Florida State wins, does that Do we know any much more about Florida State if they win?
Well, here's the thing, though. With Florida State, even if they do beat Notre Dame, they don't have the resume that Mississippi State or Ole Miss does at this point.
Mm.
So maybe that's something to think about, too. I don't know, but it'll be curious to see because it might expose Florida State, it might expose Notre Dame. One of these teams is going to get exposed.
It could expose just the both of them.
Right, exactly.
I mean, one of them is going to stay undefeated after it, but we could figure out that, well, neither of them are really good at a whole lot.
Right.
But I think if Everett Golson continues to play the way he has and, you know, just unable to control the football for any length of time, because when Notre Dame scores, they score quick. Otherwise, they're turning the ball over, throwing interceptions, fumbling it in odd places. They shouldn't be that close with North Carolina. You could say it's a trap game in between a tight game for Stanford, looking ahead to Florida State. I could buy that argument a little bit. But I don't have a lot of faith in them going down to Tallahassee and playing.
No, because if that's the case, they've played in a lot of trap games this year.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to just go by the scores, they've played in more than a few.
We'll move on down the rankings. Now we talked about Alabama saying how good they are. A game that much tighter than it really should have been. Alabama 14, Arkansas 13. Alabama with a lot of turnovers in this game, able to survive there in Little Rock for the 1-point victory. And Arkansas's 0-3 in the SEC. They're 3-3 overall. What do you make of this game for Alabama?
Is Alabama like our version of Notre Dame? Are we giving them more credit than they deserve? I mean, is that possible?
I think so.
I actually kind of think so. Because I mean, they've been so good for so long that you just almost always give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe we should stop doing that.
You just assume Nick Saban's going to restock the cupboard with the best talent in the country,
right?
And I mean, Alabama of all teams, they should be a team that was fighting for a quarterback to start the season. And right now it's Sims, and he's done fairly well. What was the score of that Mississippi State game? It was Ole Miss, sorry. It was 23-17, so close. But Alabama, they put up a lot of points in the preseason. Again, 33 against West Virginia, 41 over Florida Atlantic, 52 over Ole Miss, or Southern Miss, sorry. Florida, 42 points. But then in these last two games, 17 and 14 points.
Right.
On the road against Ole Miss, who's a legitimate good team, and Arkansas, who's 0-3 in the SEC now.
That's what I mean. I really do think that just because they're Alabama, we've just said, well, they're Alabama, so of course that. But you know what? Maybe because you look at the resume is not that impressive when you start running out the scores. Yeah, they beat up on the bad teams, but even an average Alabama team is going to do that. But
we'll see what they can. And this week they host Texas A&M, who we know can score points when they want to.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, with A&M coming off that loss, Bama could be looking at two losses by week seven.
Mm-hmm.
Which is unheard of for them in recent years.
And they
years.
Still got to play Mississippi State and Auburn.
Yeah.
Both in Tuscaloosa. But
God, could you imagine if they lose four games?
Oh.
People would be jumping off buildings down there. It's in
we
Tuscaloosa.
We got to fire Nick Saban. He is bad for this football team. Did you see? Okay,
yes.
You heard the Colin Cowherd thing,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Cow turd. This Alabama dynasty ain't done yet. Roll Tide.
You know, they really got some witty fans down that way, don't they?
Oh, my God.
Man.
The South scares me.
Yeah.
We should have just let them leave. I would have been okay with that, like, in retrospect.
As long as we could keep Florida.
No, I don't want Florida either. Florida's a wasteland.
See, us Northerners have to have somewhere to go where it's warm out, so we
got
to keep Florida.
Arizona.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
It's too hot in the summer there.
But, yeah, so Alabama with a tight one. Precarious as they host Texas A&M next week, but we'll see. Number 8 is Michigan State. They continue to be the class of the Big Ten. 45-31, Sparty wins over the Boilermakers of Purdue. And we'll go to probably my favorite result of the week. Number 10, Arizona. We made a big deal last week about how the hell is this team ranked number 10, and they justified our complaints with a 28-26 loss at home against USC. And Arizona, in just the perfect Wildcat fashion, they lose so many games like this, and it just melts my heart. missed field goals at the end, reminiscent of many an Arizona loss over the year to Arizona State. But USC goes into Tucson and knocks off the quote-unquote number 10 team in the country.
That was so Arizona. Ridiculous. And you know what? The fact that they only fell to 16 is even, I think, not quite as ridiculous, but still pretty damn ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But look at who's sitting right there with them at 17.
Arizona State.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that'll be fun later in the year. But
I'm surprised you haven't brought up, if you look down at drop from the rankings, I'm surprised you haven't brought up who fell all the way out of the top 25.
Well, you know. Well, because we haven't gotten there yet.
Oh, okay.
We'll be there in 2 seconds. We'll skip through the Oklahoma-Texas game because it's really inconsequential.
Right.
I mean, Oklahoma, if they could beat Baylor, then that's the only thing that can really mix up the Big 12 at all. Because everything else is pretty straightforward. Maybe
I don't know. A 31-26 win over Texas isn't that impressive to
no.
me.
And, I mean, I watched the game. Texas was in it. Texas was playing decently well towards the end of the game. They had the opportunity to win that. Texas did. But, eh. I mean, the only possible issue that you could run into I mean, Oklahoma does go host Kansas State this week. Kansas State's 4-1, but
they're just like they used to be when they got good again. They're good up until they back then it was until they played Oklahoma or Texas, but they're going to be fine until they play either a Baylor or Oklahoma. They're just not quite at that level yet.
Right, and Baylor goes to Oklahoma November 8th, and I guess the issue you would run into with the Big 12, which is entirely possible, is you could get into one of those three-way things where TCU beat Oklahoma, who beat Baylor, who beat TCU.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, the Big 12 is not going to the playoff.
I don't think the Big 12 is going to make the playoff anyway.
The only chance they have is if Baylor continues to just run through teams.
Right. But if they come into it, let's say that at the end of the season you've got Baylor with a loss, Oklahoma with, let's say, I don't know what the schedules are, but let's just say that no one.
Oklahoma, they play.
They got to play Baylor, right?
Kansas State, they have to play Baylor.
Okay, so let's say that the Big 12 champion is a one-loss team.
Yeah.
But you're also looking at Mississippi State with maybe one loss, or you got Auburn in there. You've got maybe Michigan State. You got
Mississippi is Alabama,
Oregon, maybe with one loss or something There's no way you're going to pick a Big 12 team over those teams. If everybody's got one loss, the Big 12 team's not going to get in, unless it's between them and like an Ohio State or somebody, then it would be an interesting thing. But for the most part, I just don't see it happening.
No, Baylor is the Big 12's hope right now.
Right.
When it comes to making the playoff, they got to go undefeated. They got to keep scoring 50 to 60 points a game.
Unless the panel that puts together the playoff field decides that they want to make it, quote unquote fair.
Right.
But other than that,
as of right now, I guess the problem for me with trying to pick like a playoff team right now is Florida State.
Right.
Because if they finish undefeated, they're going to make it in. But I don't feel that we've said it several times, I don't feel they've been impressive enough. So you could get in, if I were deciding the playoff, I could easily envision a scenario where you would have, three SEC teams and an undefeated Baylor. Just because Baylor's undefeated and they put up a bunch of points.
Oh my God, people lose their minds if that happened.
Of course, but it's never going to happen. The most you would see is two. And even then, they may not do it just for fairness' sake.
Right. Well, you're going to have a hard time.
Big 10 or Pac-12.
You're going to have a hard time convincing me that the Big 10 champion is as good as, say, the one lost team in the SEC that doesn't make it.
No, of course.
Anyway.
And especially because, I mean, your Ohio State Buckeyes are creeping back up into this thing. Slowly but surely. But we'll get to them in a second. So Oklahoma with the win over Texas in the Cotton Bowl. I hope everyone enjoyed their fried butter and not at the Texas State Fair.
Their deep fried butter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we'll move on to the Rose Bowl where UCLA, they just keep on losing. Oregon bounces back from a loss at home to Arizona with a 42-30 win over the Bruins. Mariota looked fantastic, and the Bruins looked like the Bruins. I mean, they were down big until a 20-point fourth quarter. They got this thing respectable, I guess you could call it. But Oregon back on track as being the best team in the Pac-12.
Well, we've been talking about it since before the season even started. What in the world is UCLA doing ranked so highly?
Yes.
And I'm sure there are people out there going, you know, you guys are just being too hard on them. Well, it took 6 weeks, but they're exactly where we thought they would be. Simple as that.
I mean, I think at their best, UCLA is probably in the mid-teens.
Yeah.
But it's just they haven't been good enough. They weren't good enough last year to get the preseason hype that they were getting. And yeah, Hundley's a decent quarterback, but he's not a Heisman favorite. The Heisman favorite on the field was Marcus Mariota. And he proved that with the way he played. And he had some tough games early on, but he's rebounded and got back into form. So UCLA falling out is appropriate, and Oregon being right back in the mix. You know, now Oregon back in the top 10 at number 9. If they can win out the rest of their schedule and win the Pac-12, they're going to be right up there in the conversation for the playoff.
Well, if they went out and won the Pac-12, they're in the playoff. It's as simple as that. I don't see how you keep them out.
Right. We'll keep skipping along here. Where Georgia, despite not having Todd Gurley, as he's suspended, being investigated for possibly getting money for his autographs,
which is nonsense,
seems like to be an SEC Heisman Trophy finalist problem, as Johnny Manziel had last year. I think this is dumb. I think those are dumb. These allegations.
The rule. It's a dumb rule. Because I guarantee if you go on and look for a Todd Gurley jersey, if you put his name in a search, you're going to find it on 50 different sites that are sponsored by the NCAA.
Right. And there's no way for them to really prove it either, unless they can get some sort of bank statement that said, yes, Todd Gurley received money.
Those things are always...
I'm sure these guys sign crap all the time, and you know it's not their fault if somebody turns around and sells it.
Well, even if they are selling it straight up, I mean, it's an all-cash business, so you're never going to have a paper trail to track it down. To prove it, which is right. Stupid anyway. They shouldn't even, I mean...
Especially if he's getting paid with cash.
Right, but like I said, these guys should be allowed, if nothing else, to at least go out and sell their autograph if they want to. I mean, it's absurd that they're not allowed to do that.
Right, that's their only personal thing they have is, you know, like, themselves. But
if you're going to sell Todd Gurley jerseys, I don't even know what his number is, but if you're going to, like, claim that that's just a number whatever jersey, bullshit. Everybody knows it's Todd Gurley's jersey, so give me a break.
Right. Just because of the NCAA, I'm sure there's amateur tennis players that get sponsorships and stuff.
Right.
Get their money in other ways.
The NCAA's got to, if nothing else, if you don't want to pay them or anything else, at least allow them this.
But that's an advantage that a normal student couldn't have. I could write my autograph on something. If somebody wants to pay me for it, that'd be great.
Exactly.
that'd be fine. But Georgia on the road at Missouri with a 34-0 shutout victory despite not having Todd Gurley. And Georgia, they're ranked 13. They're 5-1. They're tied on top of the SEC East with Kentucky of all teams. I don't know how Georgia – you would think that Kentucky would have made it into the rankings. Just because Georgia's at number 10, they're 5-1.
They're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th in receiving votes behind Minnesota.
Kentucky's behind Duke.
We'll talk about Duke in a second. Duke's our Blue Devils we're talking about.
Big victory this week.
That's right.
Yes. So we'll skip along. Oklahoma State beats Kansas. No big deal. Oklahoma State's kind of one of those nameless, faceless Big 12 teams. They're going to score some points. And I don't know. They're 16 in the country. Good for them. I can legitimately say I know nothing about Oklahoma State, to be perfectly honest.
I don't either, really. They're nameless and faceless, but yeah.
East Carolina with a big win over South Florida, 28-17. They're 2-0 in their conference. 5-1 on their year are the East Carolina Pirates. Where'd they move up to?
They're 18, I think.
18. They moved up one spot from 19. Okay.
They are better than Nebraska. Yeah, they're right about where I'd say. Looking using my can they beat so and so thing, I'd say that they're probably close to where they should be.
Yeah. Number 22, Georgia Tech. They were one of the last undefeated teams left in the country, but they had a tough test in the Duke Blue Devils, who march into Atlanta and get up a 31-25 win. The Duke Blue Devils. 5-1 on the season.
Here they come again.
They're coming. They're coming to that division.
I'm telling you, man.
Duke's coming for you, ACC.
Here's what I want Duke to win the ACC and become one of the playoff teams.
Could you imagine if Duke beats Florida State in the ACC title game?
That would be awesome.
What is it, 11 or they'd be 12-1?
Yeah.
That'd be something.
You got to put them in, right?
I mean, I think you would just have to because you have to.
Right.
Not because they'd be better than anybody else, but hey.
Hey, look, this is the year that the
Duke
Kansas
City – Duke won the ACC. Let them have a shot.
This is the year that the Kansas City Royals are in the World Series, so yeah, I want Duke in the playoff.
Yeah, right? So that's the last of the ranked teams for last week. We'll go through the new rankings really quickly. Mississippi State, Florida State, 1-2. Ole Miss 3, Baylor 4, Notre Dame 5,
I still
Harvard
think
6, Ole Bama Miss, 7.
Ole Miss should be number 2. I really think that.
Michigan State at number 8. Hey, that rhymes. Oregon creeps back into the top 10 at 9. Georgia's back in the top 10 at 10. Oklahoma's 11. TCU falls to 12. Ohio State, Greg. The Buckeyes creeping
hanging
up.
Tough.
Number 13.
I was just looking to see if the Spartans play the Buckeyes this year, and they do indeed. Saturday, November 8th. Ohio State, Michigan State. So that's going to go.
We've been mentioning a lot of games that are taking place on November 8th. I have a feeling that's going to be another one of those big movement Saturdays.
That's going to be a big weekend for the Big Ten there, because I think whoever comes out of that is probably going to take it the rest of the way.
Hey, you know, Ohio State, they lost that one game early to Virginia Tech.
God, what a horrible loss.
Right. But JT Miller has been kind of cruising along, getting better. So is the rest of the Buckeyes. And they're number 13. If they win out,
who knows?
Playoff contention?
If they win out, and if they, I see, that's the thing, though. They've really only got a shot at one, what you would call a signature win, and that's against Michigan State.
Well, yeah. And then they would probably have to play Michigan State again. Or are they in the same division?
I want to say they're not in the same division, but they've changed everything around this year, so
I
maybe
know,
they are.
They went to East and West. Let me pull this up real quick. I think they are in the same division, so they would not play each other in the Big Ten title.
Who is
game.
In? So is Ohio State in the West or the East?
Ohio State is in the East.
Okay, so who's ahead in the West right now?
Minnesota and Iowa are 2-0. Northwestern's 2-1. Nebraska is 1-1.
Right.
Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska are all 5-1.
So you're probably looking at one of those three representing the West. So yeah, probably whoever wins the Michigan State Ohio State game is probably going to be the one that wins the Big Ten.
Yeah, because that West is really a terrible division.
Yeah.
Minnesota, Iowa, Northwestern, Nebraska. Wisconsin should have been better than Purdue and Illinois.
Well, the Buckeyes.
No, the East isn't any better because the Big Ten's not great.
I guess it's kind of good in a way, because if they hadn't lost to Virginia Tech, they'd probably be right up there with Notre Dame because they'd be undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
And they really wouldn't deserve the ranking they're getting. So it's probably a good thing in a way that they lost that game, because otherwise, I'd never hear the end of it, that they're not good enough. And I agree with people, and they still get mad at me about it. It's like, what do you want me to do?
Yep. As we mentioned, Arizona and Arizona State, 16-17. USC moves back into the rankings at number 22. And finally in the rankings at
finally.
Number 25, your undefeated Marshall Thundering Herd, 6-0, number 25 in the AP poll.
About time.
They are they're the last undefeated team besides the top five teams that are still undefeated. Give Marshall a shot, guys. Come on. Marshall for the playoff.
Yeah. Marshall and Duke on one side. I don't care who you put on the other side.
I don't know if I could live in a world if we had Marshall and Duke in the college.
Oh, football. God, that'd be the greatest thing ever. Come on.
Jesus.
It'd be great. Come on.
No, thanks.
Oh, well.
That's the week in college football.
All right.
I think that's it for everything else this week. Can you think of anything else that we skipped out on?
Not really.
I think we covered it all, as we do every week here on Basically a Football Show. Go Sun Devils.
Go Bucks.
Go Colts. Go Colts. Beat the Bengals.
Go Brownies. How about that?
Go Browns.
Yeah, go Browns. Who they got this week? Jacksonville?
Jacksonville.
Oh, God, that's not even worth watching. Go Buckeyes, go Rockets, and go Packers. I got a lot of dogs in this fight.
I've got an interesting intra-city matchup as the Beckman Patriots travel to university to take on the Trojans.
I have the woeful, just hapless Amherst Comets, 1 and whatever they are at this point, entertaining, I believe, it's Olmsted Falls and the Bulldogs this week, which, again, we'll just be placing bets on how quick the continuously running clock starts.
I think that's it.
All right.
Follow us on all of our platforms. Do whatever you need to do to find us. We're everywhere. Listen to Basically a Sports Show when we do it on Thursday, which is tomorrow. We're recording a day late because Greg's had an interesting week.
Don't even get me started. We'll be on here another hour.
We'll probably talk about it tomorrow.
We can talk about it tomorrow. I'll tell you guys the wonderful week
I've had. We'll get to it tomorrow. But until then, we'll catch you next week on Basically a Football Show. Good night, everybody.
Try again.